All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if LeBron or Kyrie is having a harder time handling disappointment this year.
And I've got another hoops edition of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's Dude.
Da-da-da-da.
But we start every day with a Whitlock. Hit him. What you got today, Nicole?
In the first season of the popular HBO show Game of Thrones, a wild boar gored King Robert Baratheon on a hunting trip, causing the drunken ruler's death in the ensuing days. Mm. King Robert Baratheon ruled for 17 years. A fierce soldier, he came to power when he overthrew the Mad King during Robert's rebellion. By the time of his death, King Robert had grown bored, fat, lazy on defense, and was rarely seen without a glass of wine in at least one hand. He desperately demanded that mega superstar swordsman Lord Eddard Stark leave his hometown and form a super team with him at King's Landing. Any of this sound familiar? King LeBron James, first of his name, is he the NBA's King Robert Baratheon? This is how kings die. Bored, lazy on defense, rarely seen without a goblet of wine, desperate to cover their weaknesses with alliances with stronger partners. The other telltale sign is when the peasants in the king's small council start gossiping about his demise. Yesterday, Fox Sports Radio host Doug Gottlieb had a fascinating take.
We thought that LeBron's people panicked to go get Anthony Davis because the players around him weren't good enough. When maybe, just maybe, the reason the Lakers and LeBron James team panicked was because they realized LeBron isn't good enough anymore.
ESPN Stephen A. Smith, a former member of the King's Guard, called James the Lakers' biggest problem and proclaimed, from this day forward, we're going to stop calling LeBron the best player in the world. The Lakers' loss to the Memphis Grizzlies on Monday caused many of the subjects in LeBron's kingdom to begin the search for a new ruler. I say, pump the brakes. The rumors of LeBron's death have been greatly exaggerated. He's wounded, no doubt, but his injuries are not life-threatening. The end of his rule of the NBA is nearing, but it's not here yet. LeBron James is still the best player in the NBA. He's just bored and distracted and too full of himself. He has one more MVP season left in him, and I expect we'll get it next season. The unloading of his basketball bandwagon is the exact motivation he needs to abandon his wine cellar, unplug from the delusion of social media, and return to form as the league's best player. Criticism is the fuel for athletic greatness. LeBron has been denied that fuel for far too long. Next year, I would still rather have LeBron James than any other players in the association. All right, joining the desk now, our NBA veteran Jim Jackson and Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes. Marcel, I'll start with you. Is King James still the king? Is he still the best player in the NBA?
I'm going to let LeBron answer this first. If you saw LeBron's facial expression behind you through your Whitlock, pretty amazing how he was looking at you like, bruh. You ain't got to lie, Craig. Look at him right now. You over here defending a dude who's like, you can't defend me in this situation. I'm not going to let Kevin Durant going to the Warriors cloud my vision on who's the best individual player in the game of basketball. Because I think that's what happened. A lot of people said since he joined a winning championship team, we're going to always take credit away from Kevin Durant. But Kevin Durant not only has answered the bell countless times, but even against LeBron James in the finals, two-time finals MVP with a skill set that is unmatched, 7 feet basically, out there taking on guards, playing defense, and doing everything you could ask under the sun offensively. That said, it's amazing what's going on right now with LeBron James. People still are defending him. I'm an apologist. He's in the GOAT conversation, but he's not in the best player right now in the NBA conversation. You know why? Because there's a moment where you see something, but then you're trying to get the confidence. You're trying to get it mustered up to just say it and believe it. And now we have evidence. And the evidence is I fell off a cliff. I know what it feels like. And I was never at the heights of a LeBron. But I know when them pistons, them cylinders, they ain't firing the same. I know what they look like. And I know when you start saying, I'm going to activate. I know when I start saying, nah, coach, what you watch next week. As soon as you start saying that, boy, everybody who's been in the game before know, like, oh, bro, it's a problem. Because you remember the days when you didn't have to say nothing. Yeah. And it all happened. Mm-hmm. LeBron's in them stages, man. He's coming down that hill. Hopefully, he has some good breaks.
I think the Whitlock, the Whitlock, it was very creative. Have we gotten to the point, you touched on some of those things where the king in the movie kind of matches up and aligns with what LeBron is going through? One criteria, is he fat? Is LeBron fat now?
He thicker than
lazy.
Ever.
He's lazy.
He's thicker.
What? Thicker. The Lakers white jerseys. Look at LeBron in the white.
White don't do well with everybody.
Yeah, you used to do well with LeBron.
Hey, they tell you don't wear white on TV. They tell you don't do that. So I'll give him a pass on that. Right. But no, I don't think. I think right now it's very convenient for everybody to jump on LeBron and say that he's not the best right now. I think he still haven't fully recovered from that injury. So I would give him that. But look, if we're talking about
is he still the best, Chris?
Yeah. Listen to what I'm saying. If we're not going to declare him the best, who is?
What? You're up there. You up in the Bay Area. You don't think Kevin Durant's better than LeBron?
No.
But you think about that.
Wow. No more interviews for you.
Hey, Chris, you're not getting in the locker room anymore.
The podcast.
And I'm going to see you next week at the game. And you're going to be sitting with me.
Don't dodge, Jim.
Speak your mind, JJ.
LeBron's the best player to me.
Thank you.
Right now, he's averaging 27, 9, and 8. Okay? Is he playing the best basketball? No. No, he's not. He's not playing. His workload is much more than it is with Kevin Durant. Okay? Mm-hmm. Than it is with Giannis. Than it is with any other player we're talking about, maybe other than Harden, but Harden does have the help. Mm-hmm. Okay? So there comes something with being the guy for so long, okay? As soon as there's a chink in the armor, that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're going to go at it. And LeBron has brought a lot of this on himself too, though, okay? His defense right now, you see, one thing we all know from playing sports, tape don't lie. Mm. Uh-huh. So you can preach one thing and say, guys, we need to do A, B, C, and D. And then when that tape comes on and you're not doing it, that causes concern inside the locker room, okay? It's a difference if your ability says you can't do it and we got to hide you. But when you're not trying to do it, but yet you're preaching something else. See, this is where the confusion, this is where I think the butting of the heads comes from inside the locker room, is those little things right there. Saying one thing, but then, especially on the defensive end of the court, not living up to that standard. And that's where, you know, the locker room stuff is going at.
I like Chris's point that summarized, if not LeBron, then who? And unless we can go into what I'm talking about next season, I still see LeBron at the start of that. He's the best player in the league. He'll be healthy. He'll be motivated. He'll have a chip on his shoulder. He will return to all of his glories next season, and the people jumping off the bandwagon are doing it a year too early. Next year,
Marcellus. No, you are.
I'm not biting my tongue. I answered who is Kevin Durant. For the good, there's a bad. Look, Kevin Durant joining the Warriors, it makes it easier in terms of if you're game planning against him, you have so many people to game plan. I understand it's an easier role. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also can't go off like you want to because you got to respect that there is a 1A and a 1B situation up here. You have to respect that Klay Thompson needs his shots. So you don't see full Durant either. So what's going to happen is next year, if he takes his free agency somewhere else, bet against Durant next year when he can have
full. Here's the thing, though. The opposite side of it is we don't see full Durant when the pressure comes and he has to carry a team either, okay? Because we've seen that with LeBron. We've seen that with LeBron, so we don't have anything.
What about the finals?
Hold on. No.
Because of Golden State?
Who is
he? He went the biggest shot against LeBron.
Wait, did he carry the team there?
No.
Okay, so just what I'm saying.
Well, LeBron didn't carry the team to a championship either. Kyrie was there. Hello, remember? When Kyrie wasn't there, they didn't win it.
You comparing Golden State to Cleveland?
I'm not doing it. I understand that there's a positive and a negative.
What I'm saying is that we haven't yet seen that with Kevin when maybe he goes somewhere else, has one guy, and now in those pressure situations when he has to do it consistently, Now we can
get it. What championship has LeBron won without a sidekick?
I said get to the championship.
Or at least get there now?
Wait, 07.
Okay.
07 with that Cleveland team.
The Thunder went to a championship with him and Westbrook and Harden off the bench.
Who did he have? He had Westbrook and Harden, right. And he had Ibaka.
Right.
This is what I'm saying. It's hard. Whenever you try to gauge apples to apples, you can't do it.
Yes, we can.
No, you can't.
Put KD on the Lakers right now. What's the record?
I don't know.
I bet you
Put Kareem on the Lakers right now. What's the record?
I bet you I do.
Hold on. No, we don't know, but do you have an opinion? That's a fair question.
Yes.
If Kevin Durant were on the Lakers, would they be better?
Come on, Jimmy.
Than they are right now
with the current injuries and everything like that that's going on? No.
Oh, man, stop.
No.
Stop.
If Kevin Durant were on the Lakers, would they have a better record than they do right now? I say yes.
You say yes, huh?
I say
with the current injuries, everything, same things that went on.
But is Durant, will he be injured for a month?
That's what I'm saying. You're talking about the same thing. We got to keep that in mind. They were in fourth place before LeBron got hurt.
Here's what I would say.
LeBron's been back for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'll say this. Look, man, I think LeBron's the better player, but I think in this situation, trying to deal with a collection of other players, Kevin Durant would handle it better.
You mean better fit?
Yeah.
You mean better fit personality? I'm talking about personality-wise and stuff like that.
Personality-wise,
yeah,
I agree playing with, you on with that. These guys, he would handle it better than LeBron. He wouldn't lay down on defense the way LeBron has. Again, that's my criticism of LeBron.
Yeah.
I do think, to me, LeBron will be my favorite to win MVP next season because he will be fully motivated because we have denied him real criticism. And I'm telling you,
when you say we, you mean Marcellus. Because he's been doing denying him and disrespecting the king. He have to understand. Let me throw this. Hold on. Hold on, Marcellus. Because you have to keep in mind, let's put things in perspective.
Go.
What LeBron James went through, this injury played season. We all knew, and that's why I do lend credence to what Whitlock is saying about next season. We knew this season was going to be a wash. But I think LeBron James didn't understand of how dire the situation would be this year, and that's why he's struggling dealing with it. He knew this was going to be a wash. Next year is the year to where I think we could potentially see, if not his best season yet, we could potentially see one of his better ones because that's the year when he has to prove. He's in L.A. He's getting bashed and criticized. People want to see a winner. They had Shaq, Kobe, Kareem. He knows it's
step up to the plate. LeBron knows more basketball than all of us. Maybe not Jimmy, but all of us, right? Uh-huh. And you know it's weird that LeBron walked into a situation and then it's like, wow, I didn't know it was this dire. When all you had to do was one, look at the roster, two, look at what happened to Kobe, three, at the same age as Kobe started to decay right on the court. Uh-huh. What did the Lakers do? They try to give him contract after contract because of his box office entertainment value. Yeah. But this is what happens. When you get your first injury and you stay out the longest you ever had in your career, you know what doesn't happen? That the next year, when you're older, that guess what? I'm not prime and in that position where that could happen again. You are more in alignment.
I think injury's overrated.
I think he took
more time. But also, LeBron.
But he took that time because he's older.
But I think coming into the situation, I thought with him always being that leader, that he could galvanize his team and they would play a certain way. And you got to understand with young people that are trying to prove themselves a lot of times, that doesn't necessarily always correlate. They don't hear the same message. I think you said this the other day. The way you say it. The way you say it.
It sounds better with him, though.
May be taken a little bit differently by different ears. And I think that's what happened with these young guys, and he's more mentally frustrated than anything.
You're making an interesting point, though, Marcellus, and I just want to clarify. You don't think we're going to see a better LeBron next year?
No. If LeBron doesn't get some support, what's going to happen is LeBron's going to try his best to stay at this level of plateau. If you want to say, okay, he's taking a step back, whatever it is. But this won't get better. He may be more motivated. He may pick his times. He may activate in critical moments. But if you're saying a total body of work, LeBron James, I think the best of that is behind us. And he's starting to show those signs. People always think it has to be physical. It's mental as well. When you're not fully engaged for the entire process, but when you were 24, you were. Right. You know the difference? You're older. You know? Other things are out there.
LeBron James backed up against the wall, man. and that's what he's going to be. Because, and I love all this criticism. I love everybody jumping off the bandwagon. I love, because it's going to bring out the beast in LeBron.
Hold on, let's not, you know what's happening? Like, we see Tom Brady at 41, and he still wins Super Bowls, and we're like, yeah. Oh, see, you could, Tom Brady's not the same Tom Brady anymore.
That's 41.
Okay.
LeBron's 34. Well,
LeBron in basketball 30. Odometer years is 41. I don't understand why y'all not paying attention to this.
But it's like Jim's point. No? And Jim and your point. What we're seeing this year with LeBron, to me, I don't think it's physical. I think it's mental. Mental.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, that's a part
27, of 9, and 8, bro.
Yeah.
27-9-8.
Oh, it's amazing. That's
somebody's best. This is 27-9-8 on a 15-year vet that's carrying a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, does he finish as well at times? No, that's father time. Mm-hmm. But to me, the mental part is wearing him down in regards to what his expectations were and how the team didn't respond.
Can I give you one thing? I'm going to take you in the film session. Okay, you've been there at the pro level. At the pro level, there's no sound, no commentators. You just got your eyeballs and you're just staring at number 23. Is that the same LeBron James you've seen before?
No.
Thank you. That's
especially
all
on the defensive end. That's what I said. He lost a little bit. Finishing like, but he's still giving you 27, 9, and 8.
Mm-hmm. He's going to give you 30.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's still giving you that.
February isn't just about one supersized football game. On Spotify, there's thousands of free sports podcasts that agonize over the preseasons, offseason, and plain old regular seasons of nearly every sport imaginable. Basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, curling, and even hurling. Yes, that's a real sport. Now it's so easy to stay updated with the latest rumors, predictions, and scorching hot takes from some of your favorite game's biggest names. So take it one episode at a time and give 110% of your attention to the thousands of free sports podcasts on Spotify, because the best offense is a good podcast.
It's time for That Dude's Dudes. Marcellus is... What you got?
Oh, you know us. We're going to go out there and get some ball out there. Some bully ball. Staples Center. Let's go with the third That Dude of the week. My dog, let's stay in L.A. with the Clippers.
Oh, God.
And my Clip City, Chip City. Montrezl Harrell, Clippers force of nature. You know who he is.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Averaging 16 points a game. 5-plus points this year than last year. You can see Montrezl right here. Oh, Lou Williams out there. Oh, look at this fake pass. We're going to go focus in on that. Oh, man. Are you going to take the bait, Jalen Brunson? Oh, I bet you are, because Montrezl Harrell is a threat from all places on the court now. Thanks, you out. Yang, 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 yang. Seismic. 6.2 on the Richter scale right there. Montrezl Harrell, you can see the excitement. That's a real team atmosphere in L.A. Ooh. Oh, God. Major look. Dusted them off right there. And Montrez, what you got to say about this?
Unguardable. That's the only thing I can think about. Unguardable.
Unguardable. Montrezl Harrell moves men and earth to be number 3 on That Dudes of the Week. Now let's go to number 2 with the Grizzlies. Joakim Noah. you must be joking. Right here. Move to Memphis. We can see Joakim Noah bringing it up the court. Uh-huh. Sizing him up. JaVale McGee. ISO, baby. James Harden style. All the way at the 3-point line. Not a single Laker in the damn key. Where y'all at, Lakers? None of them want to guard? Okay, let's take this ISO matchup, Joakim Noah. Oh, my God. Makes damn. The most of it. Penetration drive. Dunk. Ah, probably and one right there. Oh, what are you doing, JaVale? You got your hand in the cookie jar. You better look out. You got, reach. Hand out there. Now, your feet ain't moving, but your hands are. So now, it's your birthday. You know it was Joakim Noah's birthday that day. He wanted to share that cake. Oh, no, I didn't. I'm selfish with my cake. And I'm going to bring it home, bring it down on you, JaVale McGee.
That wasn't LeBron's fault either.
Yeah, that looked like LeBron's fault.
Somebody come with some help defense. Help your boy out. Joakim Noah made him look. Uh-huh. Caught him slipping, and it's his birthday. Respect to him. Still got game in that ponytail. And that's our number 2, That Dude of the Week. Now, let's go. What are number 1? The best basketball player in the NBA. Oh, right on cue.
Yeah, Paul George.
It's Kevin Durant out there in Charlotte Warriors Road Show. KD bringing the ball across midcourt, 15 seconds in the first quarter. Oh, my God. Left, right, left. Ray for Austin. Skip to my KD.
Fresno State
alum, the big dog right there. You see that dribbling? That's a 7-footer damn near. Hitting him on all levels, cross him up, and Steph Curry's like, what did I just see? Next level. Hey, man, you are the best player in the NBA right there. Shooting up the moon balls. That's KD. Can't stop him, man. All day, every day. Let's see what he did. Did he put him on skates? Damn. That sounds cool, but that's been done before. How about put him on a hoverboard? Because both of his feet are off the ground. Golly, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, you got caught slipping right there. 20.7 rebounds. Easy Warriors win for the number one player in the NBA.
Paul George.
That dude of the week.
Giannis.
All right, great job, Marcellus. Right on time. All right, before we go to a big story, Marcellus, did you reauthorize that Nike swoosh in Chris's head?
Oh, wow.
He just did it.
Wait, come on now. What's up with that line? Where, like somebody messed up old. Instead of gave you an
I'm
answer.
They
messed up instead of giving me an answer.
We got to get a close up on that head.
All right, time for a big story. Let's move to LeBron James, whose first season in LA hasn't been going to plan, with the Lakers currently the 10th seed in the West, prompting LeBron to call out his teammates this week for letting distractions get in the way. But he's not the only star having a rough year. Kyrie Irving and the Celtics are the fifth seed in the East and have had plenty of drama of their own, including getting embarrassed by the Raptors last night. After the game, Kyrie didn't have much to say.
It seems like lately, when the teams hit you guys with a big run, you haven't responded. What is behind that?
I mean, talk about the lessons you want to take away from this game. Is there anything specific you really want to focus on for tomorrow?
Just remain in tough.
Brad talked about just defensively, guys have been taking shortcuts. So do you see that, and how do you guys fix things like that at this point in the season, you feel like?
I don't know. It's up to Brad.
Marcus said that you guys aren't playing together. Is that a fair diagnosis?
Is Marcus in pain?
All right, this is kind of interesting. Who's handling the disappointing season the worst?
Oh, man.
LeBron James or Kyrie Irving?
Just based off of expectations and seeing a team almost fully realize who they are and what they were, which is the Boston Celtics, I have to point at Kyrie Irving. This was a team that pushed LeBron last year with the Cavs to 7 games. This was a team this year when Kyrie Irving is not in the lineup, actually wins more games than they don't. And I think it's all centered around Kyrie Irving in terms of what is your real impact and what is your real effect on this team and the greater good. You think about it, he's an amazing player, but at the same time, it's not materializing to added success for this team. So LeBron is having his own struggles, but when LeBron's not in the lineup, the Lakers don't win. When Kyrie's out of the lineup, the Celtics do win. Got a point at Kyrie.
Who's handling it worse?
I got a point at Kyrie myself. I cover Kyrie in Cleveland when he was going through that, you know, going through his things with LeBron, and he would give us those short answers, responses. It was simple questions, and he would snap. You can tell he just wasn't in a good mood, didn't like where he was at with the organization. I tell you right now, boy, it don't look good for the Celtics as far as keeping that guy long term. I'm just saying, like, I used to tell people, like, Kyrie was always the toughest player for me to cover. Like, I've always had good relationships with, you know, a lot of players throughout the league. Kyrie was always the one that was just the most difficult. And I think everybody else is starting to see that. And look, it's going to take, I'll just say this, I don't want to venture off topic, but it's going to take for the Boston Celtics to really go deep if they're going to really retain him, because you can tell something is just not right with him in the organization. It has to get amended before the offseason.
And worse is a tricky phrase, because we've seen this kind of with LeBron before, whether that was in Cleveland or Miami. He said some things about teammates, demands, what he expected of everybody. So we've kind of seen this before, even when they were winning. They may have gone through a slump or some things like that. And the reason why I say it's Kyrie a little bit more, one, to your point about expectations,
I think
Kyrie thought coming in, being a leader, having won a championship, been there before, that now the rest would follow. And by him leading the way he does, that those young guys would come right behind. But it's a difference when you have a young team compared to older guys that understand it. Yep. These young guys came in with high expectations. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Yep. Come on, Rozier. What we did last year, exactly. We want to catapult our careers.
Exactly.
And the lack of communication on how Kyrie communicated with that team divided them a lot more. Mm. And sometimes what he did on the court divided them. And not knowing how to handle leadership and be a leader, you can't be taught it. Sometimes you have to kind of have a sense and feel for it. He hasn't handled that part well. So a lot of it comes back to the young guys, but also some of the things he hasn't done well that have affected, you know, this Boston season.
I'm going to go with LeBron just because when it comes to expectations, one guy is king and the ruler of the NBA. His team is in jeopardy of not making the playoffs. He has been calling out teammates. And he, bottom line, Jim said it earlier, in football we said the eye in the sky don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron's on tape giving no effort. I don't see the tape. Now, Kyrie may do a lot of silly things, but I don't see the tape of him giving no effort. That, to me, makes it bend towards LeBron has handled it worse.
Yeah, it's interesting with Kyrie. he suffers no fools. And when you're around someone like that, be careful because a lot of times they won't even let you know what they're thinking, but they will show you in response.
Right.
Because he doesn't even want to engage with you. Like, he just cuts it off. He's like, I'm not wasting my words on you. Not giving these pearls to swine. You know what I mean? And he's just going to move on.
You peasants.
You peasants. And it's amazing. I think Kyrie did walk into a situation. He said, y'all went to game 7 without me? Oh, watch this. And it's when you're a young player trying to get it, winning is not all that matters. It's also, can I be a part of this winning recipe so I can get mine? Kyrie, you got yours. Can I get mine? So Kyrie went from Cleveland to Boston to get his as the alpha of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And he forgot that he went to a team that they're all alphas saying, we want to get ours too. Mm-hmm. And you can see right now that they're just butting heads. And I think, like you said, Chris, Kyrie at the end of the season.
But wasn't that the same thing he wanted, Kyrie? Kyrie wanted to get out of the shadow of LeBron and say, I want to go back and play point guard. Mm-hmm. I want to run a team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to your point, Chris, you probably speak to this too. Those young guys said, listen, we want to grow and show that we can.
We want to run a team.
You don't think Rozier, after the display he put on last year, those minutes got decreased?
Yes.
That they don't sit in the locker room and talk about some things?
He want to start for sure. That was such a sweet take. You know, almost what you just said, it always reminds, I've been having a sweet tooth ever since I stepped on this plate. I've been having to move for some California raisins ever since I seen this. So you just
I'm coming at you, man.
I'm gonna bring out my old sports station joke. I'm gonna have to bring out the joke.
Uh-oh.
Don't let me
I digress. Move on. You're right, JJ. Go ahead.
I'm gonna throw the ball back in your lap.
Oh, man.
Does Boston want Kyrie next year?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think what they gave up to get him, I think they have to salvage that. Mm. You know, giving up Isaiah. You got to salvage that. Just from the perspective of not feeling like you were wrong, just the public perception of being wrong. The Celtics, you know, you think about the Celtics. Brad Stevens is thought of as in high regard. The front office is always thought of in high regard. I don't think they want that on their resume to give up a talent like that. He is a talent, as much as he's not working. But, hey, let's put some blame on Brad Stevens.
I'm about to say, thank you.
Let's put some blame
on him.
Whatever
to the genius.
Yeah, let's put some blame on him. Now, look. Last year, it was basically a college system with all these guys with no egos, no stars. Now you got to incorporate Kyrie, who's a superstar and has an ego. You incorporate Gordon Hayward, who's an all-star and has an ego. You got to manage egos in this league. He hasn't done that.
Mm. You know what? Sometimes the fruit from a poisonous tree is poison. And so I'll defend Brad Stevens a little bit here because I haven't watched nearly enough of the Celtics to know if this is truly, truly what I believe. But I just think Kyrie coming off that LeBron James tree, where LeBron is basically coaching the team or helping coach, co-coaching the team, that Kyrie comes to Boston and he wants to do the same thing as LeBron. Instead, where he had it, Brad Stevens had a team where everybody looked to him and he was the only voice.
Yeah.
Kyrie's a little extra voice. He's fruit off the LeBron tree, and he's not 6'9", 290 pounds, or 260 pounds, and a once-in-a-generation talent like LeBron. He can't do it.
Fruit.
All right, welcome back with Locke and Wiley, joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Let's move to New York, where Eli Manning's future has been a heated topic of debate the last few years, with a lot of people expecting the Giants to move on from the aging quarterback. But general manager Dave Gettleman said today that the narrative around Eli is unfair, and head coach Pat Shurmur says he fully expects Eli to be back with the team. This seems crazy to me.
Mm.
This at Eli's expiration date was like 3 years ago.
Hey.
And I can't believe they haven't put the proper pieces in place to move on from him. And if he wants to go someplace else and be a stopgap quarterback, a mentor for someone, he needs to do it someplace else other than the New York Giants. This decision catches me off guard and amazes me.
It doesn't catch me off guard, even though I agree with you. The expiration date has expired, has passed on Eli Manning. He still has equity in his franchise. Two-time Super Bowl MVP quarterback. He still is box office. People still rally around the name of Eli Manning. And his game,
other than Archie and Peyton?
No, yeah, yeah. Oh. Get into an argument with a Giants fan. You'll hear it real fast, real fast. 3 years ago? Yeah. 2 years ago? Yeah. Even a year or so ago? Yeah. Then you watched last year, and then you started to see some glimpses of a quarterback that actually played better than advertised. 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 6 games with 100 quarterback rating or higher. No games where he threw over 2 picks. Like, a lot of the narrative that was out there was being recycled. But if you dive into the details of just last year's performance, you say, okay. And then you couple that with the indictment on this year's quarterback class, and that's where you have Eli Manning has another year with the Giants. They're really just talking bad about this quarterback class.
I think one thing about Eli Manning is Eli Manning's a professional quarterback. Has he slid? Yeah, most guys do. As they get older, they slide. But I think what Dave Gettleman is saying here is he came in to be the general manager, and he said, I took over a franchise that was completely dysfunctional, that mismanaged their offensive personnel grouping. And I think one thing is when you become an elite quarterback, you tend to overlook a lot of issues that you have on your football team when it comes to building your football team. You show me the team that dominated the line of scrimmage last year in the playoffs, I'll show you the team that won the game. 100% of the time. You show me one game where the New York Giants actually dominate a line of scrimmage. They don't. They haven't in years. And that locker room was an absolute mess. I mean, a mess to the point where they had to have essentially security protecting Eli Apple. Like, that's how much of a mess that room was. So I think a lot of it's easy to put it on Eli and say, Eli's no good anymore. But I think Dave Gettleman comes from an angle of, hey, they didn't build this team from the inside out. They relied on Eli Manning to carry them, and he no longer has the ability to carry him. Although he did throw for 4,299 yards last year,
yeah.
And I had a career-high completion percentage of 66%.
Right.
So Dave is saying, hey, listen, I know he's not long for our franchise, but if we draft a quarterback, if we bring Haskins in and let him mentor, much like Alex Smith did for Patrick Mahomes,
I heard Gettleman inference that
right.
Kansas City and just Alex Smith a lot more to offer on the field than Eli Manning.
Well, will Eli Manning be willing to do it? Because you're 100% right. Talking to Matt Nagy, who's now the head coach of the Bears, but was the offensive coordinator, he was like, the growth of Patrick Mahomes, a ton of the credit goes to Alex Smith, the way he took him under his wing, the way he coached him along, the way he helped him prepare, full well knowing at the same time, hey, this kid's taking my job. Like, I got to go find a new job. Now, Eli just knows he's leaving. There's a difference between knowing you can continue to go out and play and you're one step away from being a fan. And Eli's going to fandom here after, they're going to put him to pasture.
And let's not overthink this. At the root of all this sports, professional athletics is a business. He's still good for business while you figure out what's best for business. And that is another quarterback coming in the fold that you can trust. And there's not a quarterback in the landscape right now that they could trust. So you go to Eli, like you said, who had some numbers last year, top 10 in terms of yards and his best completion percentage. And with Saquon Barkley there and Odell Beckham and that receiving core, you can still dress it up.
Y'all have flipped me because, one, I have to acknowledge this. When you started talking early on, the Giants not one of my favorite teams to watch. So I don't play real close attention to Eli Manning. And I do get caught up in the narrative.
So I
agree with that. But also I think the point of if you want to get a stopgap quarterback, if you jettison Eli and you want to – it's going to be relatively expensive.
Right.
And so you might, if you're going to blow the money, blow it on a guy that you already know.
Mm-hmm.
Who, again, Mark, right, your point about if it's a bit chaotic, who better than a Manning to survive in that chaos,
right,
rather than someone you don't know?
I know one thing. You know, I live in Denver, and I played for the Broncos, and now the Denver Broncos are going to sign on March 13th. They're going to sign Joe Flacco, and they're going to pay him $18.5 million, and they still are on the hook for another $12 million for Case Keenum. So you go that route, but do you really want to pay Aaron Rodgers money to have Joe Flacco quarterback your football team? That's what will go on in New York Giants right now, because you got to pay Eli, and you're going to bring a stopgap, maybe a middling-type quarterback in there, pay him $10, $12 million, and now all of a sudden I'm paying elite quarterback value for, you know, for whoever. I think that's what you have to look at as you managing your franchise.
And it's smart money. You have someone who's promoting your franchise in the right way, someone who still has the Super Bowl mojo on
He's
him.
He's got some cachet, everywhere. Right?
Yeah. Everywhere
that's
he
the
goes.
Right last name.
Yeah, he has the right last name. And look, this team is as faithful as its options. And they don't have any options, so they're going to show one more year of faith to Eli Manning.
Whitlock and Wiley.
Aye.
Jim Jackson's back with us. Time for my favorite segment.
Yep.
Anti-social. Mm-hmm. Our social media manager, Big Swole. Big Darnell Swole. Smith.
Hey, I see you in that weight.
Come on now. Hey, you need to get on that treadmill.
And stay out that kitchen.
Right. That's the problem.
Right, that's it.
What's popping in the Twitterverse?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off in the NBA, where Russell Westbrook was in Denver taking on the Nuggets and took a few pushes from a young fan sitting courtside. Russ wasn't having it and gave the kid an epic stare down. Later, Westbrook and the kid made up, but I thought it was kind of crazy. I mean, kid or not, he should know better than this. And Jim, you were there last night. Was Westbrook out of line?
Well, I think at first he thought it was somebody else
right. That
pushed him right there. And plus, he was already frustrated the way the game was going. He wasn't playing that well. Then he realized it was a kid. He was like, man, if you don't get your son, man, tell him that,
how exactly.
to act. Then he talked to the kid, you know, a little bit in that. But I think at first he thought it was a fan that reached out and kind of like pushed him a little bit.
Yeah, look, I don't think he did too much. It's never too early to let these kids know about boundaries. And look, if your father's not going to let you know this because he's just acting out the behavior that he's accustomed to, then let me just give you a moment from a role model. And so he didn't go at the kid. He's just like, man, I mean, that kid is old enough to know that you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
So, you know, you can look at that, the court size seats, and the kid feels entitled, spoiled little brat. Let me check you real quick. Mm-hmm. I like it.
I like what Russ did on the court. I didn't like the way he answered the questions after the game from the media.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what was that?
Sounded way too serious.
So
what he actually did on the court, nothing.
Okay,
appropriate,
that's where I'm at.
Blah, blah, blah. But after the game, I think.
Mm-hmm. What did he say after the game?
He described the kid hit me. Kid didn't hit him, he touched him.
Well, don't do that. I mean, if a kid hits me, I'm going to say the kid hit me. I'm not saying it hurt. I'm not saying he did it with malice.
He touched him.
Oh, a friendly gesture.
Then he said it's too much leeway with fans or whatever.
True.
Man,
what?
Courtside, man, this goes on all the time. If that had been Spike Lee, there would have been no comments made.
Well, Spike might have been his boy. And you know what? You have that relationship. The kid needs to learn that, too. Context and relationship. You got
grown
a lot of lessons.
Business.
Grown folk business. I know you got grown folk money, but you ain't got grown folk business.
I like what he did on the court.
Okay, I'm with you.
It's just not that serious. This isn't that serious. The kid, you know, the dad can say, hey, sit down.
Yeah.
My father would have had to do that to me.
You wouldn't have been sitting there.
No, we were sitting up way up in the rafters.
Exactly.
And my father all the time, you don't sit your ass
down.
Malice in the palace.
Snatch him real quick.
Rocker room style.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, staying with the NBA. Charles Oakley is back in the news. Y'all remember that crazy incident that resulted in a one-year ban from MSG?
Mm.
Well, 2 years later, Oakley isn't sure him and Dolan can fix things, even claiming the whole thing was racial, saying it was wrong what happened. Happened like it did in the 60s, 50s, and 40s. It ain't changed. And now, I thought Oakley went a little too far with this comparison. Y'all think the MSG incident was racially motivated?
No. It was Oakley motivated. Look, man. Oak watches the show occasionally. He will occasionally have something smart to say to me or to anybody, but come on, man. This ain't the 40s and 50s. You shove in security. You're a millionaire sitting damn near courtside. You're yelling at the owner. That ain't the 40s and 50s. Maybe he needs to do some research on the 40s and 50s, but this ain't it.
Yeah, to provide the third rail to your argument by always going back and saying this is like it was. Listen to the stories my father from Texas, small town in Texas. Colored bathrooms. You're not pushing a white security guard multiple times and thinking you're just going to get escorted out? Oh, it would have been different. So, I mean, he just tried to provide a little more oomph to the story. But yeah,
Oak is my guy. He took care of me growing up. He introduced me to some places in New York. It's tough for me because he had been dealing with some stuff with the organization because he'd been critical of the organization before. Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of this stuff kind of got started. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when it reached this boiling point, one thing you don't do at Oak is put your hands on him.
Oh, we know that.
Once you do that, it's going to be a problem. He don't start nothing, but he damn sure go finish something when you put some hands on him. And so I think it's more to it in the conversations with Dolan and upstairs because of what went on. So his point of view, which is not being talked about, is a lot different than what we see right there.
Well, then push Dolan. You can't push his enforcer.
Dolan wasn't right there. Dolan,
then don't push them.
Dolan was like this.
Yeah, Dolan was like, I get him.
Exactly, get him. That's what I pay you for.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to something starting to buzz online. A report came out that CFL directed the Montreal Alouettes to release Johnny Manziel and have since banned him from the league because he contravened the agreement. Now, I ain't gonna lie, I had to look up what contravene meant in the dictionary.
Violated.
He violated the terms of his contract. Mm. And since then, Manziel responded saying, I want to thank Coach Sherman, my teammates, and the CFL fans. My time there reestablished my love for the game of football and the work that goes into it. I look forward to exploring new options within the U.S. Now, you only get so many chances in life, so this might be the end of Johnny Football.
No. He'll be in the AAF.
You need the marketing.
Yeah, he's going to be in one of them.
He's going to be
leagues.
There.
Damn right. And see, if Johnny Manziel was pushed when he was courtside at 7, this is what happens.
His father should have taught him better.
He was spoiled. He's spoiled, man.
All right, what's next, Darnell?
Yeah, moving on to Laker great NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was putting 4 of his 6 NBA championship rings up for auction among some of his other memorabilia. Twitter has been commending Cap for his charitable act, and Kareem has said that much of the proceeds will be going to his Skyhook Foundation charity. Whitlock, what do you think is going on here?
First of all, let's be clear. Captain, we talking about, you said Cap, and it almost sounded like, damn, you wrong. We talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I don't know. I'm going to ask. You talking about championship rings and MVP trophies? And much of the proceeds going to charity,
I don't think he's broke. Let's just you know why? Because if you're broke, you're selling all 6 of them there. Let me be real. I ain't keeping right, 2 of them.
Yeah.
I'm broke, bro. I need all this. Uh-huh. 2, this goes back to what I tell you, and I've had too many players say it off record, not on record. Everybody ain't in the game for them championship rings, man. We selling that to the fans, and it sounds great. Give me $100 million or give me a couple of championships. Like, bros is taking this dough. He's just basically saying, look, we grew up in all the accolades, all the awards, and then you get to a place where, where's your trophy? Where's your MVP? Oh, it's in the garage.
Exactly.
Oh, it's in storage. Mm-hmm. I just think that he's showing truly what the value of a championship ring is throughout life.
Well, you know how Kareem has always been. The activist has been bigger than just basketball. Good he point. Was a hard player to read. I had the opportunity to be around him with my short stint with the Lakers. This doesn't surprise me because the social aspect of always what he wanted to do.
Much. He could have said most.
Listen, he gonna keep a couple dollars in his pocket. Well, ain't nothing wrong with that. Would you keep a couple dollars?
I'm keeping most.
So most of the proceeds going to you, the other going to the charity.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right, what's next, what's next?
Yeah, now we're gonna move on to the hottest show on TV, The Masked Singer. Uh-huh. Everyone online is talking about tonight's 2-hour finale, which you can catch here on Fox. Antonio Brown and our buddy Terry Bradshaw have already been revealed. And we're down to the final 3 tonight, the Peacock, the Bee, and the Unicorn. All right, we have no clue who the contestants are. So, guys, what athlete would y'all like to see on this show?
Athlete?
Yeah.
Oh, it's easy.
Who?
Odell. Stop playing. He a rock star. Yeah. If Odell popped out one of them things, half that audience going to faint. Like, it's just that serious. So, I want to see Odell go get it.
Nah, I wouldn't go Odell. But anyway, let me think. Go ahead.
I'm going to say Tiger Woods.
Oh, okay.
You know why? Because nobody would expect it.
That's real.
True.
Nobody would expect Tiger Woods to come out there and do that.
Oh, that would be epic.
I'm going to go a different route. I go with Robert Kraft. He likes to be.
He was already on stage.
That would be off the chain. He comes out with Meek Mill. That would be incredible.
They're going to grab that uniform like.
That would be. I'd like to see myself on this show. I want to be on this show.
Can you sing? Right,
I can't sing, but I love singing. Gotcha. I cannot sing a lick.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
All right. Look at that. Whitlock and Wiley, Mark Schlereth is back with us. Let's return to the NFL, where the Philadelphia Eagles have decided not to franchise Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles and will let the quarterback enter free agency all by himself. There had been some question about the Eagles tagging and trading Foles, whose improbable run to Super Bowl title sparked major interest around the league in a quarterback who nearly retired a few years ago. Mm. And it's not just the Super Bowl run. This past year, he did a great job coming in late in the season and filling in for Carson Wentz. I think given the Super Bowl run and the MVP and what he did this season, he could have tried to get out of there last season. He came back, was willing to be the backup again. They absolutely owed him his complete freedom to go choose the team he wants to play on. I'm sure they've come to some understanding. Just don't go to the NFC East, don't go to the Redskins, and we're all good.
Yeah, they did him a favor, and they also gave a gift to Carson Wentz because now they give him complete ownership of that locker room and really tried to extinguish the schism, the division in that locker room because there was a camp believing in Nick Foles. And what this does is now give you the solidarity you need to rally behind Carson Wentz, who is still a damn good quarterback. I know the injury concern is starting to get to a place where it's really alarming. Last couple of years, you go back to even college, he had injury concerns. But this is a guy who last year, in the last couple of years, as a matter of fact, with injuries, still 54 passing touchdowns. Still a guy who's ranked number 3 in completion percentage and 7th in passer rating. And this is a guy coming off of injury and still trying to play himself into form. So a tremendous talent, greater upside. And Nick Foles gets to dominate a weak free agency class at the quarterback position.
And draft class.
And draft class. Teddy Bridgewater, respect to all these guys y'all in the league, but Tyrod Taylor, Josh McCown, Matt Schaub, those are the big names. So, yeah, he's going to get his money.
Yeah, I think it does two things for the Philadelphia Eagles. One, it rewards a player who's very popular in that locker room to say, go get yourself a free agent deal. You've done a great job for us. And that's an important aspect to a football team to say, hey, management understands where we're at as players and they're rewarding a guy instead of prohibiting a guy from going and earning a living. And his story is great. So his story resonates with, you gotta understand in a locker room, you know, 80% of the guys are made up of Marcellus and I. You know, guys, Marcellus was a second rounder, but most of us are later round guys or free agent guys. And so we see that story, and that's important to us to know that you're going to treat us right, even though we're not superstars. That's an important aspect to building team chemistry. The other thing it says is, Carson Wentz, you're our guy. And when you look at Carson Wentz, you look at the ceiling, he's almost a 4-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio guy. Nick has always been a 2-to-1 guy. Like, he's been on a miraculous run here last year and the year before.
Lead me to my next question.
But the bottom line is Carson Wentz has got a greater ceiling than Nick Foles.
Let's get on Nick Foles, though.
Okay.
What would you pay? Someone's, to me, probably about to overpay and give him $23 million per.
Yeah,
sure.
And will he be worth it? Will he deliver?
I think he delivers. One, this guy, we know about the Super Bowl run. Last year he was undefeated except against New Orleans. Lost twice against them. Just puts up the numbers that will suggest he deserves top dollar, but more importantly, inspires. It's hard to find that kind of inspiration at that position. You can have a lot of guys who could throw the football. We were just talking about Eli Manning, who had top 10 numbers in some categories. But it's the inspiration. It's the guys who are going to stay alive on routes. And for whatever reason, you don't every day see guys making a throne of another one of their peers. And when I saw that, I was like, these guys are buying into Nick Foles.
That's not Doug Peterson's system. That's Nick Foles.
Well, I think part of it is being in the right system. I think for any of us, being in the right system is incredibly important. And I think that's important for Nick Foles as well.
Jacksonville and Miami.
That's to me your two options. Jacksonville, or Miami. And then I think a smart coach and a smart coaching staff says, what is this guy good at? And then puts him in a position to win. That's what coaching's all about. It's not about saying, hey, what can't you do? Let's watch you operate in things you can't do. Let's see what you can do, and let's give you the best opportunity to operate in those. Are you going to overpay him? Yes. That's what free agency is all about. What free agency isn't overpaid? What free agent guy isn't overpaid?
Let me bring it home even closer for you, Mark. If you were the Broncos, would you have preferred to go after Nick Foles rather than acquiring Joe Flacco?
Me personally, yes. If I was making that decision, absolutely.
Even though Nick Foles is going to cost more money than what you're going to have to pay Joe Flacco.
Yes. Marcel. Younger and I think more upside on Nick Foles.
Look, I would have the first question, if it was a question of Miami of Jacksonville by far. Leonard Fournette, the defense still has the players, just needs the inspiration to feel like they're in games. Mm-hmm. First couple of losses, they only lost by 3 points. Then they got the brakes beaten off them by the Dallas Cowboys, and then things started to get out of control, but still a good team. I would go there. Now, of all the free agents out there, including Joe Flacco, by far Nick Foles. What he does at the position is rally, and that's what you want more than anything. Sometimes that's even greater than
a guy that inspires people, yeah. Right?
This makes John Elway's decision look even dumber to me. Yeah.
No patience.
They went in for Flacco. This guy's on the market freestyle. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. Time to put on our thinking caps. We're joined by Mark Jackson, Mark Schlereth, Jim Jackson.
Get a job.
Back with us. As you all know, I'm a journalist. We've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus, here. We're going to take a deeper look at some big issues in sports. We've got a special cap for our Columbia grad.
That's Darnell.
Appreciate you. Nice Ross. I like that shirt.
All right, this is a very serious topic. All right, let's move to Connecticut, where a controversy has erupted after two transgender female sprinters placed first and second in the girls' 55-yard dash at the high school state championship, with one of the runners setting a new state record. The issue of trans athletes competing in women's sports has been a subject of heated debate in recent years, with tennis legend Martina Navratilova taking some heat after offering an unvarnished view of the issue earlier this month, writing, quote, "To put the argument at its most basic, a man can decide to be female, take hormones if required by whatever sporting organization is concerned, win everything in sight, and perhaps earn a small fortune, and then reverse his decision and go back to making babies if he so desires. It's insane and it's cheating. I'm happy to address a transgender woman in whatever form she prefers, but I would not be happy to compete against her. It would not be fair." All right, this topic is being reverberating all around the internet. And one of the first thoughts I had is like, okay, where does this end and how will this dramatically perhaps impact girls' athletics and women's sports? Mm-hmm. How many might go into basketball? And we might see a reshaping of college basketball and things like that. And this issue is so new that I don't think we've landed on the right answer yet, which is somewhat understandable because it's a brand new issue. But I don't think this is the right conclusion for transgender women to compete directly with other women. I just think there is a competitive advantage.
Definitely a competitive advantage. objectively, there's a competitive advantage. One, this issue is not new. The success because of the ruling from this issue is now new. So let's go back to 2004 when the IOC allowed transgenders to compete in open fields. That's when you first saw the rule change, and now you're starting to see the results and some success from that. We have to understand that this is not a human rights issue. This is a sports integrity issue. And what's happening is, it's getting convoluted. Think about youth athletics. Think about when you first try to play a sport. There are distinctions, or you could call them discriminating factors. Men, boys, women, girls. You go to the park and you're 8 years old, You're on the girls' team or you're on the boys' team. Simple, right? And then they also go beyond that. They go into age. They say the 8-year-olds, you go against 8-year-olds. 9-year-olds goes against, exactly. Then let's go objectively even further. How much do you weigh?
Yeah, weight, thank you. Weight limit.
I had a stripe on my helmet. Yeah. I couldn't run the ball.
Right.
Man.
Because yeah, you're too big.
Yeah. Too big. Yeah. And because there are objectively different factors based on all the criteria. This is also one as well. So it's interesting. My daughter is real familiar with the story. She ran high school track at Glastonbury, which is a part of the story, in Connecticut. She's a sophomore at UConn running track. And we had a long conversation about it this morning. And to what this story is talking about is so demoralizing because there's an unfair advantage given to the transgender athlete. Now, what are we talking about? How can we fix this? That's going to be a different conversation beyond should they be allowed to compete against explicitly birth certificate male or explicitly birth certificate female?
Yeah, this is a tough, as the father of a professional athlete and the father of two daughters who played sports, if my daughters were top in the state and got to run in the state finals and got beat by a transgender athlete, I would have a problem with that. Would bother me. And not have a problem with them being transgender, but it's the competitive balance issue that I would have an issue with or that I would have a problem with. And, you know, we find guys, we're keeping guys out of the Hall of Fame in baseball, whether Barry Bonds or whether it's Mark McGwire or Sammy Sosa, guys that probably deserve to be in there because they use performance-enhancing drugs. Not that this is a performance-enhancing drug issue, but they certainly have an advantage having, you know, a different biological makeup. So I just think it's a fairness and competitive balance issue. And, the other thing I worry about, you know, we want inclusion and we want fairness and we want to have the discussion. And I'm okay with having that discussion. And I think that's important. But also, if, as we've seen in our society, a bunch, people will try to take advantage of this. Mm-hmm. So is it you're taking scholarships away? You're, you know, all the things, like all of a sudden I'm a young lady who's competing against this that's a tilted competition. Do I stop competing? Do I stop using, you know, the gift that was given me because I get discouraged because I'm competing in an unfair contest? Like, those are the things we have to think about both sides here.
Yeah, and it's a tricky situation because I think when Martina went into her deeper discussion, she talked about the biological factors of men just over the years and how they grow compared to women. So they always, no matter if you take their hormonal supplements when you make the change, there's still intrinsic things, biochemistry going
first
inside
five,
your body.
First 5, 6, 7, exactly. 8 years before you took it.
Before you took it, that you right. still have those
advantages.
And that's what she's talking about. We can't cross the line where we're segregated against transgender. No, we're saying that in the sport itself, there are advantages, and we got to figure out, the sport does, how to separate the two to make it even. And here's the thing about it, and I think you touched on this, Mark. If it's allowed to kind of go the way it's going now, how does that deter future young women from playing knowing that they can't compete on the same level? Where does that lead down the line? Because for so long, women have always felt slighted in regards to the respect on the sports side, okay, compared to men, whether sure. that's pay, whether that's, the way the sport is covered, all of that. So they're still fighting that. So now this comes into play. This is another thing that women, professional athletes look at and say, we're still fighting to get equality, and we still can't get it.
And I'm glad they're actually having this fight on the track, because it's the most objective sport we have. It's not about necessarily all your coaching, teammates, and all this stuff. It's just, what is your time? So let's give some objective numbers that supports why there are a difference between male, female, and now even trans athletes. The fastest man ever to exist is Usain Bolt, 9.58. The fastest woman ever to exist is 10.49 in FloJo. That 10.49 by the fastest woman ever wouldn't even win a high school state championship. I'm just giving you that for perspective. But now you let some male who is not necessarily going to be the top of his field, but look at the almost 1 second difference in the quickest race we have.
That is such an advantage, unfair advantage, mm-hmm. if, like you said, the hormonal levels may be the same, but that's the oil of the engine. But the engine parts, the muscle density, the fiber, the fabric of a male is going to lead to a bigger, faster, stronger individual. And there's no way you're going to be able to blend the two. You can start to look at other alternative methods, and the population, just like the success from a trans athlete, will continue to grow. And then there will be a growth with that, and we can look at that. But beyond that, I think you're getting into murky water.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Boston Celtics point guard Kyrie Irving. Uncle Jimmy,
what
are you? You're a karate guy now, huh?
Hey, yeah.
That's what I am.
No.
You want some of this?
No. We're not going there.
You can't do that.
We're not going
this
there.
This ain't the 80s.
This ain't the 80s.
Yeah.
Where's my dojo?
We're not going there.
Why are you a white belt?
Yeah, why are you
Let's go there.
Why are you dressed like a California Raisin?
That's not on me, man. I just wear what they give me. Why are you a white belt? Why don't you practice more?
Bet you're wondering how I knew about your plans to make me blue with some other guy you knew before.
Oh, why'd I get started?
Yeah, let me go to the highlight from our discussion earlier about Kyrie and LeBron.
LeBron is having his own struggles, but when LeBron's not in the lineup, the Lakers don't win. When Kyrie's out of the lineup, the Celtics do win. Got a point at Kyrie.
One guy is king and the ruler of the NBA. His team is in jeopardy of not making the playoffs. LeBron's on tape giving no effort. I don't see the tape. Now, Kyrie may do a lot of silly things, but I don't see the tape of him giving no effort. Mm. All right. I feel like LeBron has handled disappointment worse. Marcellus feels like Kyrie has. Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
First of all, you know this is personal for me. First of all, you know, I spent some time with Kyrie back in, what year was that he won that championship? 2016, after he won that championship.
You live in Cleveland? You a Cavs fan?
No, Merkulis. I actually met Kyrie. He hired me to DJ and coordinate the entertainment for his postseason, post-championship after party.
What?
You know, the yacht party, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
That was you?
That was my work.
You know? The Becky Boat Bash, they call that. That was you?
Most definitely.
I'm about to die over here. I remember that boat ride.
Hey, okay. Hey, man, look, man, there was a time, you know, back in my youth, in my euphemisms, in my younger days, that, bro, you couldn't, how can I say this to you youngsters? You couldn't spell Jungle Fever without spelling it Uncle J-I-M-my. And let's be real. Let's be 100 to the people out here. We've all had a case of it, okay?
A case.
Unlike my nephew, who's had a prolonged case of it throughout his 40s.
He's skinny.
Ain't that about right, nephew?
No, hey, man, we talking about Kyrie Irving. Get back on topic. We're not talking about me.
Ski
Kyrie
slopes.
Irving.
Slopes.
Look, man, first of all, man, I like Kyrie.
Love him.
I got nothing but respect for the young brother. You know, he's a smart young man. Mm-hmm. Courageous. The young brother got the courage to say what he believes. You know, he stands up on it. He stands on it. And I happen to share his belief that the earth is flat. Honest to God, y'all, real talk. Listen to me, Merkulis. If the earth was round like you say it is, wouldn't Jason be in a lot better shape than he is just from walking uphill all the time? Huh? What about when he on this side?
We talking about basketball. Basketball.
Not the axes.
No one wants to hear your ridiculous theories. You and Kyrie's little stupid theories about the earth being flat. Basketball.
Yeah.
I take Kyrie over LeBron any day. Mm. I told y'all this yesterday. LeBron's an old used car, bro. He blaming the handling problems on the mechanic. He blaming the driver, too many passengers in his backseat. LeBron done pointed more fingers than Jason done pointed at a Red Lobster all-you-can-eat buffet. Kyrie done handled the situation with class.
Well, Kyrie, he blamed his young teammates, though. He did that, too.
Not like LeBron. At least, hey, come on, man, be 100. At least Kyrie pretend to play defense. He ain't out here hosting talk shows and skipping games and making rap albums with 2 Chainz and whatnot. Speaking of 2 Chainz, let me ask you this. So, if my nephew was to become a rapper,
oh,
his name would be 2 Chainz and 3 Chins, right?
Oh, bracelets.
Man, leave that oh, man, alone.
Here we go.
Stop. New material, man. All these damn jokes about me. You need
he got on you.
What about Marcellus,
yeah,
man?
Get on the hot dog.
Here one day.
Get on me.
You know, what happened? Remember the joke about, you know, the oil light coming on? Can we get back to that kind
of thing?
Hey,
man, listen. Every time I hear Marvin Gaye heard it through the grapevine, I start laughing. I ain't going to.
All right, listen.
Give me some bee sweat.
Here's Kyrie
you
Irving.
You might be big, but you ready.
I got him at a 70.
70?
Yeah, all-star level. Just barely all-star level. 19 job performance, 14 all-time greatest, 19 character, 18 authenticity.
Oh, man, he is certainly a GOAT of our game right now. You look at him, I give him 20 in job performance. Got to respect his all-time greatest. Hit the biggest
20?
Shot.
20? All-time greatness, he made one shot?
You the one caught up on the block. I'm caught up on the shot that won the finals, actually. You caught up on the block. Character 16, authenticity 24. He tells the truth. I'm going to do what I got to do and do it the way I want.
Hey, everyone. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. I want to tell you about another podcast from Fox Sports that we're very excited about. It's Waltrip Unfiltered, featuring 2-time Daytona 500 winner, Michael Waltrip. Michael will be speaking with the biggest names in NASCAR each week and discussing the biggest storylines in the sport, like Daytona 500 winner Denny Hamlin. Episode 1 is available already. Subscribe and listen to Waltrip Unfiltered right now. Let's get the show rolling.